Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. Local music historian Andy Sparling recently released an audio documentary about the Streamliners. It was a swing band taken from the ranks of aircraft maintenance trainees to become a touring band traveling throughout the European front from 1944 to 1945. The band would be known as one of the best bands of its time. It's a privilege to share this documentary with you on today's show. Its historic and musical significance cannot be underestimated. Enjoy the trip down memory lane while learning some incredible Canadian history.
Now roll up your trousers, gang, for we're coming at you with a neat bit of jive. Patrick, you wrote it, Minor Jump.
July 1941. World War II not going well for Canada and the Allies. The Nazis occupied most of Europe, and it looked like Germany would quickly steamroll the Soviet Union after Hitler's surprise invasion the month before. England, already battered and holding on by a thread, wondered what Germany would do next as Prime Minister Winston Churchill tried to rally the British people.
We shall not turn from our purpose, however somber the road, however grievous the cost, because we know that out of this time of trial and tribulation will be born a new freedom and glory for all mankind.
At home, young men were enlisting for the fight. Three of them were training as aircraft maintenance personnel at the RCAF Technical Training School in St. Thomas, Ontario. The three had all played music professionally before the war, and they began jamming in their spare time at St. Thomas. They were trumpeter Billy Carter of Goderich and saxophonists Jack Perdue and Phil Sparling, my dad, from Clinton, Ontario. And they were crazy about swing music, just like everyone else in North America. Dad was a year or two younger than the others. He had just turned 19. Swing music was in hot demand everywhere, including the military. The bands of Glenn Miller and Benny Goodman enjoyed popularity that would rival Taylor Swift today. Billy Carter was soon given the green light to recruit an RCAF St. Thomas dance band as the Air Force officially designated the three trainees as bandsmen. Over the next couple of years, they would recruit musicians, practice endlessly, and play dances and concerts for everyone on base and in the St. Thomas community. The key addition was elite Toronto saxophonist Pat Riccio, whose unique arrangements gave the band its very own sound. All the practicing paid off. 2 years later, the band was posted to RCAF Gander, Newfoundland, the largest airport in the world at the time, and the main transit point for the overseas flow of arms and planes to Europe. It was another 10 months of constant rehearsing and playing that would turn the 15-piece band into what knowledgeable musicians have called one of the finest big bands ever produced in Canada. It was in Gander where they acquired the name Streamliners. 9 months after they arrived in Newfoundland, The D-Day invasion spelled the beginning of the end for Hitler.
This is London, and this is John Snagg speaking. Supreme Headquarters, Allied Expeditionary Force, have just issued communique number one. Under the command of General Eisenhower, Allied naval forces, supported by strong air forces, began landing Allied armies this morning on the northern coast of France.
3 months later, the Streamliners were on the troop carrier Empress of Scotland, bound for England, and swing-starved Canadian and Allied troops aching for a musical taste of home. Here are the words of my dad, Phil Sparling, about that week-long Atlantic crossing, as read by Halifax journalist Jason Baxter.
I remember the trip overseas, and not kindly, at least for the first 3 days. Very sick. Tossed coins with Bill Bebbington to see who would crawl up three decks to get some slop in order to have something to spew up. The last 3 days, we did concerts on deck. There is no truth to the rumor, traceable to a disgruntled Scot in radar, that the U-boat crews enjoyed them as much as the troops.
They arrived in Liverpool, and then by train to London, where air raid sirens warning of German rocket attacks were going off. Soon, the Streamliners would begin a mind-boggling schedule of performances and travel over the next year and a half. Once again, Jason Baxter now with the words of my dad.
Now, the travel started. 7-hour train ride, standing mostly, to bases in Cornwall and Devonshire and Wales. Ferry from Stranraer, across the Irish Sea to Belfast, and various Irish camps, mostly starting with Bally. Many, many visits to bomber command bases in Yorkshire, including some American ones where we gluttonized on peaches and eggs and steak. Planes to the continent and shows in Hamburg, nearly all rubble. Lille, Amsterdam, Paris, and Eindhoven. By boat back to England, where we added the Germany Star to the Defense of Britain ribbon. Some heroes. Always felt sheepish when guys who fought and killed and lived in terror in planes and trenches started applauding us.
You couldn't accuse my father of overblowing the Streamliners' time overseas. In the next year and a half, they would come under enemy fire at the Battle of the Bulge. Witness the aftermath of the horror at the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp in occupied Germany, the place where Anne Frank died. And like every other Londoner, they would be dodging the nightly barrage of German V-1 and V-2 rockets. Guitarist Len Coppold was the last surviving Streamliner when he died in 2022. He was from Montreal, and before the war had played in a band with a young pianist named Oscar Peterson. Not long before his death, Len Coppold told me the rockets made life scary for everyone.
It was a scene that you couldn't believe, because the whole city, of course, was blacked out. No lights, no car lights, nothing, you know? And here you're in the black, by yourselves or with a group. If you go into a hotel, I think you have to go through about three doors because to keep the light out on the out of the street, you know. It was scary. It really was scary because when the V1s took off and came in and got through, you hear them putting away, and all of a sudden their motor goes off, and you don't know where the hell they are, whether they're on top of you or down the avenue or, you know, somewhere in the area. And so it's always, and then you get the big explosion. So you've got three or four of those a night. It wasn't a soft and easy time for us, for anybody, for the Brits, especially the Brits, my God. They suffered this every night of the week, you know. And in total darkness, it's a weary, weary feeling in a city, you know, that you've got millions of people in the area, you know. And they go down to their subway at, say, the night underground, stay the night. And then up first thing in the morning, back to work. Brits, I'm telling you, are so strong.
Drummer Don Hilton of Toronto died in 2016. A year or so earlier, he talked to me about an up-close experience with a V-1 flying bomb.
I remember one night, it was a flying bomb that came over, and when you heard the engine, you knew that the air raid sirens, of course, had gone, so then you'd wait to hear the engine of the bomb. And if you heard it getting close, you'd be nervous as to when that engine cut out, because when it cut out, you knew it was going to fall very near you. I remember one night I was sharing a room with Jake Perdue, and we were asleep. Air raid sirens came. We woke up and we listened. We thought, oh, it's not going to be near us. Well, all of a sudden, it was near us. So I said, what do you think that is, Jake? He says, I think it's just a truck. So we waited a while longer, and the engine stopped. And Jake said, it is like a hell of a truck. That's a bomb. We have to get the hell out of here in a hurry. So we ran downstairs.
And you made it down in time.
Yeah.
Did it land close?
Fairly close, yeah. I said, I don't think it's a truck, Jake. Yes, it is. That's just a truck. No, it isn't.
Occasionally, the Streamliners played at the Queensbury All Services Club in London, now known as the Prince Edward Theatre. It was a place where one of the most popular bands in the world, led by Glenn Miller, also played. Miller had been seconded by the American military to do exactly what the Streamliners were doing, play great swing music for the troops overseas. One night in November 1944, Miller appeared at the Queensbury Club to see the Streamliners play, maybe a couple of weeks or so before he disappeared on a flight across the English Channel, never to be heard from again. This story was told to me by three band members in separate interviews, including guitarist Len Coppold.
He was just up in the balcony when we played. We came on as a featured orchestra, and he and his band members were up in the balcony, and they gave us a good hand when we finished.
Three or four people have told me that at some point, Len, he said of the Streamliners that you guys got the best band in Europe next to mine.
Other than, he did say that. It was at that night, the concert at the theater. He applauded us, and the guys in the band were up with him and gave us a nice salute.
Not long after that encounter, in December 1944, the musicians boarded a DC-3 Dakota transport plane for Holland and a month-long tour near the front lines to bring a little bit of home to Canadian and other Allied personnel. It was the day after the Germans had launched the Battle of the Bulge, their fierce last-ditch attempt to stop the Allied advance in Europe. Drummer Don Hilton recalled the band came under fire as it set out to play in a church where German soldiers were so close they could actually hear the music.
I guess the day that Glenn Miller actually disappeared, we flew to Eindhoven, Holland, and there was a pile of enemy air activity that day. And I remember Charlie Overall, who happened to be sitting by one of the little portholes, looked out and he said, "Oh, we have fighter planes alongside us." And somebody said, "Are they ours?" And he looked again. He said, "Yeah, it's okay. They're ours." We went by trucks from Eindhoven north to Forward Defense Post, and it was a rainy, dark night in December. And as we arrived at this defense post, we had the canvas down on the back of our truck. All of a sudden, the canvas whipped open, and it was a rifle with a bayonet pointing at us. And it was the British Army. They saw our blue uniforms, and they couldn't figure out exactly who we were. Anyway, they were very careful checking us out, and they said, "Now, the next defense post you're going to, you better be very careful, because that's the Canadian Army, and they have very nervous trigger fingers." We had to cross the Nijmegen Bridge while it was being shelled by the Germans to get to our gig. It was 250 yards from the German line. So we did our stick, as you call it, for about an hour with all our audience at high alert, with rifles pointing. Each time the door would open, they'd all turn and point their rifles. But the Germans were 250 yards away, so they were listening to our little concert.
A week or so later, the Streamliners woke up at a Dutch airfield to a thunderous and deadly attack by the Luftwaffe, the German Air Force. Len Koppel told me the Streamliners literally dodged a bullet, since before the attack happened, they were moved from the barracks where they were to sleep. That barracks was destroyed in the air assault.
Yeah, it was New Year's Eve. It must have been 44. We were close to Nijmegen, and so we were put up in a little hospital that was on the grounds of an airport. And we had our quarters. It was very pleasant. It was a Sunday morning, if I remember correctly. All of a sudden, we heard thundering bullets and shots and aircraft and coming zooming in and zooming out and zooming in and then going after the aircraft on the tarmacs, and ruined about, I think, 45 or 50 aircraft in one or two swoopings, you know, by the Germans. See, even though we were protected, it was a bit of a shocking New Year's Day. And the team was, we weren't laughing about it, but we were all together and stuck together on the basis that, hey, we're all still alive and everything's okay. But the Germans killed a lot of crew people and ground crew, you know, at the airport.
Just 3 months later, Winston Churchill delivered this long-awaited and happy news that the war in Europe had come to an end.
Yesterday morning at 2:41 a.m. at General Eisenhower's headquarters, General Jodl, the representative of the German High Command, and of Grand Admiral Dönitz, the designated head of the German state, signed the act of unconditional surrender of all German land, sea, and air forces in Europe. Today is Victory in Europe Day. Long live the cause of freedom.
But the Streamliners wouldn't be going home yet. 6 months later, in October 1945, they would go for another month and a half tour of Europe to play for Canadian and Allied troops in occupied Germany this time, and Holland and Belgium and France. 10 days into that trip, the band was taken on a tour of a captured submarine base in the German city of Kiel. The size and scope of this massive German naval facility and how it had managed to survive relentless Allied bombing that had severely damaged the city itself was amazing to Len Coppold.
And we went down into the bunkers, and my God, it was a city, a huge city. And we had seven or eight submarines being restored, maybe 12 being in repair, and about six or seven being made. So can you imagine how big the city was? I mean, miles long, long tunnels that came out from the sea so that submarines would come in. Well protected, of course, even though the bombings were every day for a long time for Kiel. So we were just mesmerized by the space and the equipment. I mean, things coming out of the wall to lift this or lift that, well maintained, and it was just amazing to see this. And they had quarters for about maybe 700 workers forced to work. They came in from Russia and from Poland, and they worked on the submarines.
Two and a half weeks after that, again while the band was in Germany, the musicians were taken to visit the site of the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp. The camp had been liberated about 7 months earlier. Even after that period of time, it was, in the word of Len Coppold, devastating.
Well, we were playing in Celle for the Canadians. Celle is about 7 or 8 miles north of Belsen. And we were there for two nights. And one, I don't know whether Brit or Canadian, senior person said, "We want you to come to see Belsen." So we went out, the whole team, and I said, "I want you all to see firsthand." And my God, when they opened the gates, it just was deplorable. I mean, there were people, believe this or not, who had died in 43, and they were still lying there in skeletons, never moved. The stench of the place was, couldn't believe it. I'll never forget it. Never in my life will I forget it. And then we went through the areas where the women were kept, and they were kept in like a stable kind of a situation, crowded to death, you know. Then there was a whole section of nothing but all their clothing and all their souvenirs and all the things stacked out in the area. And the fencing had kids. I didn't see one child, believe it or not one child, but we saw a lot of kids' clothing, and that was just unbelievable.
On the day of the Streamliners' visit to Belsen, November 17, 1945, the camp's German commandant, Joseph Kramer, was sentenced to death by execution by a British military tribunal a short distance away. My dad never spoke to me about his experience at Bergen-Belsen. But on VE Day in London, it was time for celebration and reflection. What now? The Streamliners would be heading home, including my 23-year-old dad.
I remember joining the giddy mobs on VE Day and surging down the Strand, the palace, cheering the royals who appeared at intervals all day. They wept, we wept, the gods wept. As the guy with billboards and Piccadilly Circus proclaimed, "The end is nigh." We found ourselves trooping up the gangplank of the Ile de France, destination Canada. It was time to savor the improbable success we'd enjoyed. Time to sweep it all under a mat and get on with the rest of our lives.
Dad became a teacher with a healthy dose of music on the side. When I was growing up, he was always playing on Friday and Saturday nights. The others became letter carriers, print shop workers, in the restaurant or advertising business or newspaper production. Not all of them headed home, though. Bassist Jack Fallon stayed in England, where he forged a career in music that included performing with Duke Ellington, Sarah Vaughan, and many others, even the Beatles. He played the fiddle solo on Don't Pass Me By, Ringo's song on the White Album. Saxophonist Bob Burns also spent a lot of his later life in England. He shared stages with Benny Goodman, Barbra Streisand, Manhattan Transfer, and he too is on a Beatles record. The clarinet solo on When I'm 64. That's him. Saxophonist and arranger Pat Riccio and drummer Don Hilton became well-known names in the post-war Toronto music scene. The RCAF Streamliners played their final gig overseas on January 31st, 1946. They never played in public again. I'm Andy Sparling.
And so ends another in the series of programs Canada Calling, with dance music today by the Streamliners, the Royal Canadian Air Force Band, headed by the trumpet of Billy Carter. Here's an invitation right now from Billy and the boys to join them again when your radio gives out with that theme, Moonlight and Tears. Until then, remember, this program has been an edition of the Canada Calling series, presented by the Broadcasting Service of Britain's Forces. Your announcer, Art Boulder.
That was Andy Sparling, a local music historian. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at ConsiderThisNorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.